jingo, won't you share our love? We will build for you a hut. You're gonna be our favorite nut. We'll have a lot of little low, by golly. Then we'll put them in the follies. By jingo, said by gosh, by gee. By Jiminy, please don't bother me. So they all went away singing, oh, by gee, by gosh, by
hello, and by welcome jingo, to the American Writers 100 Pages at a Time podcast. And in this episode, we are going to begin our look at the last of the Richard Wright books we're going to examine in this podcast before moving on to James Baldwin. So it's going to take about five episodes to get through The Outsider, so I think we're going to take it easy. And actually, it's hard to exactly know what to say about this book quite yet. So it's in five parts. So I'm going to dispense with the page number and nitpicking about the page numbers for now and just do one part per episode. It is 500 pages, so it's going to even out to be the right page numbers. Now, let's start with the epigraphs. I don't do this enough. I often just skip them, but often they're useful. He starts with two. Cruelty has a human heart, and jealousy a human face. Terror, the human form divine, and secrecy, the human dress. William Blake. So, cruelty, jealousy, terror, secrecy. Cruelty, the heart. Jealousy, the face. Terror, the human form divine, and secrecy, the human dress. Obviously, it's pretty clear that all these are relevant to this novel. Then we have Job. Mark me and be astonished and lay your hand upon your mouth. Now that's just, I believe that's Job speaking there, just saying you'll be astonished, right? What you read will shock you. Now if you've been reading Richard Wright for a while, you're not really that shocked. We've kind of seen this stuff before, and I think if you've read the Richard Wright novels, if you read Black Boy and Native Son for sure, but even I think there's a lot of hints of Laud Today in this book. And I remember Laud Today wasn't published at that time. It was posthumously published. So the fact that there's a lot of recycling of some themes, like the alienated wife, the fear of like unwanted pregnancies, the burden of that, the youngish black man, although I think this character is a little bit older, wanting to kind of escape from the life that he's in, working at a post office, borrowing money from the employer, into debt all over town, drinking too much. This character is more like the character in Laud Today than the character we get in Native Son. This almost works as a sequel or an expansion on the ideas of Laud Today, I think. Although, that's not how it's usually talked about. I haven't found that much online about The Outsider. I do want to nitpick for a second the Wikipedia article for it. It says this, and I don't know if this is just the internet getting worse. I'm sure if Google's getting worse, AI is getting worse. It's all kind of getting bad. But listen, The Outsider is Richard Wright's second installment in a story of epic proportions, a complex master narrative to show American racism in raw and ugly terms. Okay, that sentence, first of all, it's not very objective, right? It's like what you'd read in a review. And second, it doesn't tell us what the second novel is, or the first novel. If this is the second, what's the first? Is it Black Boy? Is it, I'm assuming he means Native Son, whoever edited this. But this is more like what you'd get in an opinion piece or a review maybe of the book, like an epic story of epic proportions. That's not the kind of objective language that's really, I think, best for Wikipedia, especially not in the introductory passage. I don't know. Like the weirdest thing for me is that it doesn't mention what that first novel is, which again, I assume it was supposed to be Native Son. You do see this, you can read this as a bit of a sequel to Native Son too. Obviously, it's also set in Chicago, and it's dealing with the same themes. Now, I do think this is more conscious about the problems than maybe Native Son is much better at just the feeling of the dread here. And I think Richard Wright wants to strengthen that and enhance it, right? Like he's saying here, mark me and be astonished. Lay your hand upon your mouth. Like you're going to be shocked. But if you read Native Son, there's nothing here that's shocking if you read his other work. But anyways, he also has here under book one, he has a quote, another like a secondary epigraph here. Under Dread, part one is called Dread. Dread is an alien power which lays hold of an individual, and yet one cannot tear oneself away, nor has the will to do so, for one fears what one desires. Kierkegaard. Ah, so now we're at it. We all know Richard Wright abandoned Marxism in the 20s and turned to existentialism. This is partially along with his removal of himself from America to France. It's not clear to me how well he understands existentialism yet. He was certainly attracted to Camus and some of the French existentialist writers. Here he's quoting Kierkegaard, who is another existentialist, a Christian one. Now, I see here on Wikipedia at one point there's a mention that maybe this is a Christian existentialist novel, which if I don't really remember that much about Christian existentialism other than that this idea that like freedom comes in like the embracement of faith, right? Like Kierkegaard, you have the ethical stage where you follow God's rules, and then you have the religious stage where you fully embrace faith entirely to whatever, you know, that like freedom exists sort of in the total embrace of one's faith. Like Abraham killing his son, right, is the example that Kierkegaard uses in Fear and Trembling. I'm really vague. This stuff's pretty vague for me. I used to be really interested in this stuff when I was in college, and less so these days. But now the word the outsider, it sounds like the stranger, right? He had read The Stranger by this point. So around the time he started writing this, he read The Stranger. So he's got existentialism on the mind. And of course, we have a main plot here which seems to fit that. This idea that our main character, Cross Damon, where does he get these names, by the way? I think Bigger Thomas is weird enough. Cross Damon, I guess it's pretty good. Now, he has a kid named Cross Damon Jr., which is wild, too. But, all right, Cross. The story is he is in a subway wreck, or is it the elevated train wreck? Whatever, he's in a wreck. And he abandons his coat. A man about of his build and size and age is mutilated, smashed in the wreck. They find Cross's jacket, so they assume he's the one who died. So Cross is now able, when he hears the news that he's dead, he says, cool, man. I got some money in my pocket. I'm just going to abandon my old horrible life and move on. So really great setup for a story about basically the world is what you make of it. He's got a fresh slate. He's been his wiped clean. All of the problems that he created for himself, in many cases, he's very much like the character in Law Today, where he's largely responsible for a lot of his own issues. Yes, society plays this role too, but he's kind of fucked up his own life. Or at least made it worse. Well, now he can wipe the slate clean and be someone else. But in America, is that possible? Is he ever going to not be able? Is he ever going to escape being a black man? And I think that's where the story ultimately has to go. Like, maybe if this had happened to a white person, they could remake themselves and get away from their bad choices. But if he can, if Cross Damon, and I haven't read much into the book yet, but if Cross Damon can't remake himself, then I think we have this brutal reality that. You know, freedom just simply does not even existentialist freedom exists for African Americans because you can never escape what other people give you. Now, of course, we know The Stranger ends with someone essentially being in jail and finding freedom in his own confinement. There's hope in that, I guess, but I hardly believe that's satisfying for Wright. I'm skeptical of how far we can push this existential turn in Wright, just because it doesn't seem a solution. Maybe it just is fatalistic, ultimately, that you know, like he's just becoming a, is he just a doomer? And I think he's the right generation where he can only be just, almost be justified in being a bit of a doomer. And I'm starting to understand maybe civil rights generation writers like Baldwin being a little annoyed with Wright for this kind of nihilism almost of things. But anyways, let's see what we want to talk about. Dread, it's about 100 pages long. And the vast majority of this, well, at least I want to say the first half of this book one, is mostly our introduction to Cross and his messed up life. Like, he drinks. He's a pretty bad alcoholic. And he's in debt. Again, repeat the Law Today character, if you remember that one, that novel I really quite liked. In debt, drinking, with a wife he doesn't want. Now, one difference is in Law Today, they didn't have any children, I think. But yeah, there are no children. But there was the pregnancy was kind of in the air, right? No, she was forced to have the abortion, right? That sort of is repeated here, but in a slightly different way. But he doesn't really want to be his wife. He's got three kids. One, like, there was twins, so there was two pregnancies, and the one resulted in twins. And there's just despair everywhere around him. There's a paragraph like this. He checked his watch, 2 o'clock. A gray day showed through the curtained windows, and from the snowy street rose the din of traffic. Today was like yesterday, and he knew that tomorrow would be the same. And it would be like this now for many months. Each morning, he'd come from work and crawl wearily into bed and toss for hours, yearning for the mercy of a sleep that was not his. And at last, he realized that his search for surcease was hopeless. He sighed, stood, crossed to the dresser, and took another pull from the bottle. At 6 o'clock, he'd report to work, and for 8 long hours, he'd stay on his feet, drugged with fatigue, straining against glass, sorting mail like a sleepwalker. He moistened his lips with his tongue. He had not eaten all day, and as the alcohol deadened in the raw nerves of his twitching stomach, he thought, I'll do it now. I'll end this farce. End quote. So he's thinking about suicide right there in the opening pages of the book. Again, very much like our character in Law Today, where he's essentially like a night worker or an afternoon worker. Like, after the office is closed, you got to sort out the mail. Right? That's his job. So he's got the weird hours that character had. Anyways, Broken in Will, from page one, like Bigger Thomas in a way, but more acute. He's a little bit older. Bigger Thomas was a bit of a younger character. And his anger and dread, like, here the word is dread, in Native Son it was fear, but it's, you know, it's pretty strong. Now, we get some of his background. I don't know how much of this is going to be important, because he does remake himself. We learn within the first 30 pages or so that he has seduced and slept with a 15-year-old girl. Now, apparently, according to Cross, she said she had her fake ID that said she was 18 or something. But I don't think we're meant to believe that, really. And she's pregnant, and he has to deal with that. Now, there's a very interesting conversation Cross has at one point with another black man about white people and their fear. And I think this is a bit of a development in, I think Richard Wright is trying to think a little bit more about white people's fear. Maybe this is because of McCarthyism and the paranoia of the 1950s about communism and things like that. But, you know, that maybe that's where it's coming from. Or the anxiety about civil rights. This was 53. Brown versus the Board of Education is 55, right? So, yeah, he's overhearing a conversation, actually. So an old man says, how come you reckon they're so scared? And the tall man says, they're guilty. And guilty folks are scared folks. For 400 years, these white folks have done made everything on earth feel like they ain't human. Like they're outsiders. They done kicked them around and called them names. What's a Chinese to a white man? Ching ching China man with pigtails down his back, and he ain't fit for nothing but to cook and wash clothes. What's a Hindu to a white man? N-word who's in love with ghosts, who kisses cows and makes cuts the vipers. What's a black man to a white man? An ape born by God to cut wood and draw water and with an inborn yen to rape white girls. A Mexican, a greasy, stinking rascal ought to be worked to death and then shot. A Jew, a Christ killer, a cheat and a rat. A Japanese, a monkey with yellow skin. Now our colored brothers are visiting us from Mars and Jupiter, and the white folks are sweating in a panic. End quote. Now, there's a little bit of a joke at the end there, but I don't know. A passage like this, I almost probably should have just spoke out the N-word there, because in the context, this is the kind of, you know, because there's all sorts of racial slurs throughout this whole thing, I guess. It's all pretty bad. Now, this is a pretty bold statement to make, and obviously our character here speaking probably has many of these same prejudices. I doubt he's as racially enlightened as he might think he is. But, you know, if you can spout out stereotypes that easily, you know, maybe you hold some of them, I guess is my feeling. But still, there's an attempt here of trying to analyze this culture of fear among whites, which you don't see in Native Son. In Native Son is all the fear and anxiety of Bigger Thomas. Now, anyways, he goes to visit Cross Damon, eventually goes visits Dot, who's seeing a doctor, and it turns out she's pregnant. And the doctor there is like questioning Damon about the guy who impregnated her, and he fakes his identity. And he said, well, Dot told me it's someone named Damon, and he should know. We got a birth certificate here. She's 15. He's going to jail. And so now Cross has to deal with jail. He has to deal with a baby, another baby. He has to deal with his wife. Does he have to pay Dot off? Does he have to get a divorce and pay his wife off? He's going to have to pay alimony in some way or child support in some way. He is, you know, he's kind of done himself in here. Statutory raped himself into a big problem. And he's got to deal with his family. Dread was now in him deep, writes. He had to tackle Gladys, and he didn't know how. The tussle between them had been so long and bitter that there was not much room left for jockeying. Over the years, they had hurled at each other every curse word they have known. And he felt that his present visit would by then be far more exacting. End quote. So he has to go and deal with this pregnancy. And this is another level of his anxiety about it. Now, at some point, he seems to have blacked out during this. He also beat up Gladys, his wife, and she accuses him. She's terrified of him at this point. And very much like in Law Today, we have the wife calling the post office and informing on him. And we also, just like in Law Today, we have him going and borrowing money on an advance on his wages from his bosses. I think maybe it's from the union secretary this time, but, you know, from people at his workplace. He goes to work, and on his way home, he gets in this accident. And he's with, like I said before, he's with a man. He's sitting next to a man who's about his build. He survives the wreck, the accident in this train. The other man is obliterated. He leaves his jacket, though, so he gets identified as the dead man. And he's walking around, and he immediately is like, awesome. Like, it's a really weird reply. Instead of immediately thinking, I'm going to go to the police and correct this, he's like, he's dead. Why should I refute it? Why should he deny it? He, of all people on earth, had a million reasons for being dead and staying dead. So he goes to, he basically says, I'm dead. I'm going to turn my back entirely on my life. I'm going to turn my back on my wife, and my kids, and on Dot, and her pregnancy, and my job. I'm going to take this money I got, this advance, this debt I'm not going to have to pay back. And he goes and checks into a hotel, and then goes to a brothel. And at the brothel, he runs into another post worker who says, hey, aren't you dead, dude? We heard you're dead. What's going up with that? And Cross Damon murders him. It's really reminding us, it happens about 120 pages in, which is when the murder of Mary in Native Son takes place. So in both books, you have a murder early on driven by fear. For Native Son, it's fear of being accused of being a rapist, fear of being a racist, combined just with the overall feeling of dread and fear that Bigger Thomas feels. Here it's, he's got this new life and he's going to defend it. If this guy lives, and I think his name is Jim, he's going to no longer, he's going to have to go back to his old life, which he doesn't want to do. And that's basically where it ends. He gets on a bus going to New York at the end. He leaves Chicago at the end of this book one. So the question is, can this save him? Now, I think the answer is going to be no. Knowing Richard Wright, I think the answer is going to be no. But we have a lot of pages. We got 400 pages or so before we get to the end of this book. So let's see where it takes us. All right. So I hope that does enough to introduce this book to you. I'm only read the first part. I've never read this book before. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I don't know if it's going to be thematically that new. In fact, if anything, it's more brutal and direct than Native Son and easier to talk about because it's not as cagey with the way it frames things. And I mean, not cagey, it's not as oblique. It just comes out and says things than trying to make you feel what Bigger Thomas feels. Maybe he's given up on that. But anyways, let's do it. Let's do it again next time, I guess. Part two is called The Dream. I think it's a little bit shorter, but like I said, I'm just going to dispense with 100 pages at a time and just do one book at a time, one section, one chapter at a time. And it'll all average out. Okay, anyways, let me know what you think of The Outsider if you've read it. I wonder why this isn't a more well-known book. Is it just Native Son is in the canon? Richard Wright's place in the canon is Black Boy and Native Son, and those have been chosen, and these other books. One reason I like The Library of America is it breaks us out of that what's ever in the Norton Anthology. So, but still. I heard about this book before I heard about other Richard Wright's books. I just never read it. I never got around to reading it. But anyways, that will be it for now. Let me know what you think, though. I really will appreciate your comments. I'll see you next time. And every night they sang in the pale moonlight. Oh, by gee, by gosh, by gum, by jaw. Oh, by jingo, won't you share our love? We will build for you a hut. You're gonna be our favorite nut. We'll have a lot of little, oh by gollies, then we'll put them in the follies.